Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the twofer of free speech because we're having a joint show with Dr. David Duke. We've already started the show. I just want to remind everybody to go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Or phone it into 1-800-724-2719. Operators are standing by. Okay.
We don't want any umbrage. We just need fundage. And we do.
I had never thought of that.
And you know something? It's really interesting. And I think it's amazing. I mean, look what happened to Candace Owens the other day. She was obviously deplatformed from her economic base and the Daily Wire with Ben Shapiro and these other Jews. And we have the ADL deciding who can be heard on YouTube and not, literally the major media and the major even social media, of which there is a degree of freedom of speech on, much more than the controlled media. It's very clear that there are certain boundaries, there are certain red lines you can't cross. And the one red line you're not allowed to cross is just pointing out specifically, especially if you're a goyim, if you're not a Jew, specifically Jewish supremacy. I mean, we hear about how white supremacy is the great threat to the world, and yet at the same time, they want to pretend that there's white supremacy in the West, white supremacy in America, white racism, and so forth in the West, when the reality is we have the governments of the West and the media of the West as the most anti-white kind of destructive, hateful media that is not only putting out massive hate propaganda and propaganda which make people, white people, hate themselves and work against themselves, but are actually enhancing and enacting legislation and policies such as what's going on with our border in America. What's happened to the border in Canada? What's happened to the border in Britain? What's happened to the border in France? What's happened to the border in the EU? We have policies that are literally constructed. And this is really by the Jewish media, the Jewish think tanks. And they've openly promoted this principle of a replacement of Europeans and to make Europeans a minority in our own countries, which is really amazing. And really, they've been at war with us for 150 years, especially in the last 150 years, where they really worked to take over the communications to vastly influence media, newspapers. Then they went into radio. They went, of course, they control Hollywood. They control Wikipedia today, the world's encyclopedia, which has 1,000 times more power than any encyclopedia ever had in the history of the world. It's the one encyclopedia go to. It's run by a self-identified Jewish Zionist, who also was a radical supporter of Israel, which he claimed, and he got a $1 million prize from Bar-Ilan University in Israel. And his website, which is about almost every public person in the world, sports figures or whatever, if ever they say something against the Jews, they're going to be treated in a very different way from anybody else. And I can give an example of that, doctor, to myself. You know, I graduated from MAUP with a degree, a doctorate in history. And so a lot of other famous people in Europe have graduated from the university I graduated in. It's the biggest university in Ukraine. Many of the top government officials in Ukraine are graduate university. In fact, the former Jewish deputy, the Jewish prime minister of the country, was in fact a graduate of my school. And hundreds of people have been, if you look in Google and you just look up my university and you give outstanding graduates at the school, they have people in academia all over Europe, in science, people who are teaching in major universities, for instance, with degrees just as I have, identical to my degrees or similar to it. The head of the most famous orchestra in the world is a graduate of my school and their school of music. They've got music, they've got medical aspects, they've got, you know, legal aspects. There are many attorneys, even in the government of Ukraine, that are from my school. And if you look up any of their biographies about from MIOP, they say David Duke graduated from MIOP, you know, controversial. And this school is nothing more than a diploma mill. They quote the State Department saying that Mayop is a diploma mill. And, of course, they claim that Mayop is a very anti-Semitic university because of the fact, well, one of the facts is that I came there because they had anti-Zionist conferences. But so they literally say, and when they talk about my doctorate, because they don't like to talk about the fact that I've got some academic credentials, they talk about my doctorate, they say, oh, it's just a diploma mill. But the other 800 or so major graduates of the school over the last many decades, not a single one of those famous people are said when they talk about their degree or give their source of degree. For instance, the former prime minister of Ukraine, not president, but that was one of the prime ministers under Zelensky, in fact, Grossman, that they tell the school he graduated from, but they don't say he graduated from a diploma mill. This is how they operate. And I was thinking about Candace Owens the other day, and then I was thinking a little bit about the New Testament. We had a lot of celebrations over Easter, and people forget about what the whole story of the Passion. Mel Gibson got in big trouble for his movie about the Passion and about the fact that Easter is all about, and the struggle between Judaism and the Jewish establishment and the oral tradition, including the Talmudic tradition, and Jesus Christ is legion. And Jews consider the New Testament very anti-Semitic. And the story of Christ's crucifixion himself is a story of Jews hating Jesus Christ because he didn't fit their idea of what a Messiah should be. And they wanted to see a Messiah that would essentially lead the Jews to conquering the world and defeating their traditional enemies like the Romans and the Greeks and these other enemies. And Christ didn't preach that. He preached individual salvation with God and a moral revolution in our own hearts. And he also countered and directly challenged many of the basic notions of Judaism, including its extreme ethnocentrism and extreme racism. And in fact, a few days before he was crucified, and certainly had a big role in this crucifixion, which was very much orchestrated as shown in the New Testament, by the Jewish community and the Jewish leaders of the Jewish religion, the Sanhedrin and so forth, which, voted to fight him. They are the ones that prevailed upon Pontius Pilate to execute him according to the New Testament. But this whole narrative is forgotten today. And it's forgotten today that the New Testament really is an exposure of Jewish racism and the fact that Judaism and the Jewish elite of Jerusalem, the Middle East at that time, was the biggest, hated Jesus Christ. They orchestrated the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, and they were the ones persecuting Christians on a massive level. And that's an interesting narrative and interesting thoughts for us to get into today, because I wanted to discuss that. I did this in the show last night with Dave Gahari on our Dave and Dave show. And you should listen to that, folks, on Sunday night at 6 p.m. for 2 hours. Mainly questions and answers, but it was really a powerful show talking about, the realities of the whole passion, what they call the passion play in Christian.
Yeah. And I would say that the Dave and Dave show really is a good show, and Dave Gahari does a good job of keeping you on the straight and narrow, Dr. Duke.
Yes, he does. He rings that gong when I go past the 2 minutes. So he keeps me pretty much in line, but he does let me sometimes wrap up with a few seconds or a minute or so on an important point where it needed some more elucidation, it needed some more explanation. But there's so many things we can get into. So I thought about this, one of the most famous lines in the New Testament itself. One reason why they hate the New Testament, typical of what they hate. And the line goes like this: and no one spake openly of him, Jesus Christ, for fear of the Jews. Now, it's kind of like the same way in certain circles, no one speaks of Donald Trump for fear of the Jews, actually, because they know the Jewish establishment hates him. The Jewish establishment ran his impeachment.
I just want to say you're not comparing Donald Trump to Jesus Christ. You're just
God knows
it up as one particular example.
I think it's fair to say, Donald Trump is no Jesus. That's for damn sure.
But, he hasn't, has he overturned any money changer tables yet? I'm not sure if he's gotten that far.
No, and if he did, he'd probably been assassinated by now. I don't know. But I think there's a good lot of evidence that Kennedy himself was overthrown by the Jewish domination of our security services, even back in Kennedy's time. Rostow was an important person in that process. And Kissinger and all these other people was very important.
I'd like to get a chance to weigh in on a couple of these things before we go too far.
I want to get into the Christian thing for a minute for Easter, but
I want to get into.
Okay. So if you want me to start off with my thesis here about Easter, and then you can ask questions concerning declaration is.
Let me start off. It won't be long, and okay. And it'll be a good launching point for you, because sure. Yesterday was Easter, and although I'm not really a religious person, something inspired me to go to the 6 o'clock mass, and I went, and I was, you know, looking up at the ceiling. It's a beautiful church, and looking around and thinking back on the many centuries and the 20 centuries of Christianity, and thinking of the cathedrals that this was built to reminisce. And then I'm listening to the sermon, which overall I thought was a good sermon. But there was one thing I noticed, and when the priest was reading or speaking and talking about Jesus on the cross, and he talked about the people around him who were calling for his death. And I noticed he didn't say the Jews, unless I missed something. Maybe I'm being unfair to him.
Even though the New Testament's very explicit, they even quote the crowd saying, crucify him, and they actually say in the actual quote, his blood be on us and our children. And this is the quotation that they say Christian Jews, which is called the blood libel against the Jews. But this is quoting Jewish hatred against Christ, where they even said, kill him, his blood be on us and our kids. We're happy to do that because, he is evil. And one thing people don't even realize is that the Talmud is the most anti-Christian book ever written, and the Anti-Testament is considered the anti-Christian Jewish scholars say the New Testament is the most anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic book ever written. In fact, in the Jerusalem Post, they have an article by none other than Mr. Bowditch, the same Bowditch who's praising the mass murder, of the Palestinians, same Bowditch who's a rabbi, but his daughter and he has a business where they sell dildos and all sorts of other things. And they had a video of him the other day on Katie Helper's show, and they showed him on there, making fun of Christians and all that, and saying they're eating the flesh of Christians. He's eating the flesh of Christians, and he's enjoying their licking up their blood, And he goes on to, you can't, it's so shocking to see what they do. And in the video, he's grinding on literally like mimicking like a sexual grinding on a young boy. I don't know, just a young teen boy in his lap. He's grinding on the kid, you can't make this up. And here's a Jew. I mean, you can't even imagine.
And by the way, I just want to, you called him Sam. He's more commonly known by the Hebrew version of the word Sam, which is Shmuel or Shmuley.
Shmuel. I didn't say Sam. I didn't even give his first name, I don't think. Yeah, it may have been Shmuel.
Same name.
Shmuel. So, yeah.
Samuel.
I mean, there's lots of interesting things about this. I mean, there's some quotations in the book which shows their racism and everything in their Talmud, which can't be denied. I can give you the exact quotes from it, right? And it says, by the way, the truth is that Jews have said for a long time, and I can quote directly from the Jewish scholars, that the Talmud is their chief book. Their Talmud is, in fact, what they study in their yeshiva day and night for decades, by the way. And one of the interesting quotes from the Talmud from the Sanhedrin 59a, it says a heathen or a Gentile is translation for that, who pries into the Torah and other Jewish scriptures, including the Talmud, of course, is condemned to death. For it's written, it's our inheritance, not theirs. That kind of shows you the racism, but it also shows you the fact is they don't want Gentiles really knowing what's in the Talmud. They don't really know this because any Gentile who read into it, you know, would read it. There's another section. In fact, not only has Israel Shahak talked about this, the famous Jewish writer and academic in Israel. He had a book called The Weight of 2,000 Years, Jewish History, Jewish Religion. And he talked about the fact that Jews actually claim in the Talmud that they resurrected Jesus Christ from the dead, but not to free him and to and bring him up and resurrect him, but to bring him back to life. For what purpose, you ask? Well, for the purpose of torturing him for all eternity, and having an eternal boiling Jesus Christ in hot excrement. I mean, I don't want to use the SHIT word. It's almost hard to say that in relation to anything of, with Christ, but that's it. I mean, this is the hatred they have, and the hatred they have against Christians and Gentiles is extremely apparent all the way through the Talmud and extremely apparent in many parts of the Old Testament. Now, I'm not trying to question all the Old Testament, but I'm trying to point out that if you look at the historical record of Christianity, early Christians were very aware of the Talmud. And I'll give another example, Doctor. Let's take the Jewish Encyclopedia. Now, the Jewish Encyclopedia is one of the most famous Jewish publications in all history. It's created in the first few decades of the 20th century, and it was created by the leading Jewish organizations of the world, both religious and secular. And it's the most authoritative. It's like the Jews put together, the best of their stuff on every subject. It's called literally the Jewish Encyclopedia. Dozens of major rabbinic organizations. And it says, by the way, very clearly that the Talmud makes it clear that Balaam, the one they talk about, the semen, is Jesus. And even a Sassino Talmud footnote, it says that Balaam being used as an alias for Jesus. They even used an alias because they knew if Christians found these writings that they would use it. But some of the interesting things you can find in the Jewish Encyclopedia, it sums up the positions of the Talmud in many ways for Jews. This is for Jews, by Jewish scholars. And this is what it says. Okay, so on pages 617 to 621 of the Jewish Encyclopedia, it shows the Talmud's attitude toward non-Jews. Now, here's a couple of excerpts for our listeners. They held, these are talking about the Jews, who are the founders of the Jewish faith and who ran the Jewish faith, they held that only Israelites are men. Gentiles they class not as men, but as barbarians. Another reason for the discrimination is like the flesh of asses, and the issue is like the issue of horses. Now imagine, they're saying that non-Jews, which is 99.8% of humanity, you can't get more hateful or more depreciatory than to say that Gentiles are like the flesh of asses, donkeys, and the issue is like the issue of horses. He goes, the Gentiles were so strongly suspected of unnatural crimes. Boy, that's a nerve when you read the Talmud and all their unnatural so-called sexual connections. It's amazing. It was necessary to prohibit the staining of a cow.
Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. Mrs. both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We meet every day at the same cafe, 6:30, and no one knows she'll be there. Holding hands, making all kinds of plans, while the jukebox plays our favorite song. Me and Mrs. Jones. We got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We gotta be extra careful that we don't build our hopes up too high, 'cause she's got her own obligations, and so do I.
Suspected of unnatural crimes. Boy, that's a nerve when you read a Talmud and all their unnatural so-called sexual connections. It's amazing. It was necessary to prohibit the stabling of a cow in their stalls. That's from Abba Zohar. The Talmud, the Torah outlawed the issue of a Gentile as that of a beast. So they're basically saying the Gentiles are beasts. That's so similar to the heads of Israel talking about the Palestinians, not as human beings, but animals, right? And the dehumanization of human beings, which allows the genocide that they're now creating, because that's how you do a genocide, is you dehumanize people, and that's exactly what they do. Quote, the Almighty offered the Torah to the Gentile nations also, but since they refused to accept it, he withdrew his shining legal protection from them and transferred their property rights to Israel. The presumption is that the Gentile obtained possession by seizure. The property is considered public property, like that unclaimed land in the desert. Those are just some. I we're not going to spend a lot of time giving quotes, but I do like to quote again John 8:13, howbeit no man spake openly of him, Christ, for fear of the Jews. Now, I want to give another example here about the difference in how we view Easter today, okay, and we view that.
But I just want to remind you, we're really well into the show, so.
Okay, I'll go quick here. I want to give you a couple quotes from the many of the early popes of Christianity, when the Christian church, you know, was whole and the early battle was there. Gregory the Ninth condemned the Talmud as containing every kind of vileness and blasphemy against the Christian doctrine. Benedict XIII, his bull on the Jews, 1450, declared the heresies, vanities, and errors of the Talmud prevent the Jews from knowing the truth. Innocent IV burned the Talmud as a book of evil. John 22 banned the Talmud in 1322. you know, condemned Jewish usury, anti-Christian activities. Pius XIV condemned Jewish genocidal writings. Genocidal writings. Expelled all the Jews from the Papal States, Pius V. Clement VIII condemned Jewish genocidal writings again. Now, what has that got to do with Gaza today? Are Jews committing a genocide in Gaza? I think so. Did they commit a genocide in the Soviet Union when they took over the Soviet Union from the Russian Christian people and murdered between 20 and 30 million of them? Did they commit a genocide against the people of Ukraine when they did the intentional famine to reduce their population, which primarily killed women and children? I mean, it's just really interesting when you look at this, and when we look at Easter, it's like we ignore the whole passion. Now, again, Mel Gibson got in trouble for that. But let's just start with, no one spoke of him because of the Jews. We talked about Donald Trump there for a second. But isn't this subject talking about Jewish racism, Jewish power, Jewish supremacy, and Jewish wars, and Jewish involvement in communism, or Jewish involvement in these genocides as Jews? Isn't that the same principle? No one spoke of this for fear of the Jews. Is fear of the Jews a real thing, Doc? That's my question for you.
You mentioned Rabbi Shmuley Botach at the start of the show. Yeah. And a few weeks ago or so, he came out with some little, what would it be, a Twitter post where he's saying, it's time for Jews to stop caring about being loved. It doesn't matter if we're loved. What we need is to be feared. We got to stop being loved and start being feared. And, you know, what I'd like to say is, hello, past 2,000 years, for fear of the Jews. It's not that people, I mean, with the exception of maybe a fringe of Christian Zionists, it's not that our societies are so philo-Semitic really because of love of the Jews. It's fundamentally because of fear of the Jews, because the people who matter, the people who direct society, are afraid of the Jews, and the people who are aware of what's going on they are afraid of the Jews. We know that there's going to be retribution brought on us if we speak out about Jews. So people keep silent for fear of the Jews, not for love of the Jews. And so this Shmuley Botach guy, who by the way really isn't very bright, and his it's not that he's an esteemed Jewish scholar. I'm not sure how he got to be so prominent. He's prominent enough that I think when Elon Musk stepped out of line at some point, he had to spend some time with Shmuley Botach or something. But Shmuley Botach is he's not even a pornographer. He and his daughter run some sort of sex toy shop in Brooklyn. He's just a really weird, kind of disgusting character.
Well, that's like Jewish rabbi ring in New York that ran a human trafficking organization of human organs, right?
I think in New Jersey, right across the river from New York.
Yeah.
This was something, it was part of a huge scandal where you had, there was ultimately some sort of FBI raid on these people. And there had been some massive organ trafficking scandal, which involved in I think a mayor of one of these towns up in northern New Jersey, some city councilmen. It was some massive thing.
Wasn't done. his hustle was wrong. His mind was his own, but the man lived alone. Ooh, Superfly, you're gonna make your fortune by and by. But if you lose, don't ask no questions why. The only game you know is do or die. The game he plays for keeps. Hustling times in ghetto streets, trying to get on.
I think a mayor of one of these towns up in northern New Jersey, some city councilmen. It was some massive thing. And yeah, trafficking of organs, which of course is something that's fairly well documented to take place in Israel. Israel has all of these Palestinians who routinely die in their prisons. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of talk.
Kidnapping hostages. The Jews have 7,000 people in their prisons, their dungeons, and they're tortured. In fact, they say, according to a Jewish human rights group, that 40% of the Palestinian children have been sexually molested and sexually attacked, including a lot of the young girls raped and so forth. And this is a thing. And they've taken far more Palestinians and put them into their dungeons, again, with no even criminal charges against them. And they put them in horrific situations. They make them, one of the first things they do, both boys and girls, and they're all males, but pretty much mostly, they are the guards. They make all the young girls and all the young boys strip naked, right? And and yet this is not talked about. We're worried, you know, we got to let the hostages go. The 200 or 300 hostages, however many it is, we got to let the hostages go before we have any negotiation. Well, how about, you know, the 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 Palestinians that have been held, many of them for years without charges and tortured horrifically in the Israeli jails? But there's no mention of this, of course, in our major media. Dr. Slattery.
Oh, sorry, I was muted. Yeah. And I don't want to get too repetitive. Everybody who listens to your show or listens to my show knows why the mainstream media doesn't repeat these things, that who dominates it. If you don't mind, I'd like to mention something I listened to this morning. This is something new from Ron Unz, or Unz, I think is how he pronounces it, Ron Unz. And we've been talking a lot about Ron Unz, and we've been talking a lot about Jeffrey Sachs as well.
Who's Jewish, Ron Unz, but we call him a righteous Jew. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, Ron Unz, I guess, has a very Jewish background, and Sachs is also ethnically Jewish. And Ron Unz has gotten to the point, he was talking about this on his most latest American Pravda, about his own, I guess you could call it awakening. Because he was prominent in the 1990s in the, he ran for governor at the young age of like 34, 33, 32. He had enough money to run for governor of California in the Republican primary. Well, get the vote. And he was prominent in some of these ballot initiatives to make English the official language or to restrict bilingual education. And he was kind of a mainstream conservative, but he was saying that after 9/11, when there was the run-up for the war in Iraq, and there's all of these falsifiable claims that that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and whatnot, it set him on this path. And we started talking about him. As soon as I got on the show in 2012, we were talking about his study of racial, like anti-white and pro-Jewish admissions into Harvard and other elite schools. That's how he got on our radar screen back in 2012. But since then, he's moved on and on to the point where now he's one of the leading, what would you call it, revisionists of the whole mainstream Holocaust narrative.
And the World War II narrative and just other aspects of Jewish global politics and Jewish cultural activities in destroying the foundations of Western Christian civilization, you might say.
And so this article from today, and you can listen to it or you can read it, because he reads his own articles, so you can listen to them. He's talking about Jeffrey Sachs, where Ron Unz is already talking about Jewish power per se. He's crossed that rubric.
Go ahead.
But Jeffrey Sachs, who is far more prominent, he's one of the most prominent American academics of our generation. He's talking about more and more things that would be. They may not cross the Rubicon of Jewish power, but they still move into what is often dismissed as conspiracy theory. And two examples he gave, one is where Jeffrey Sachs is talking about the assassination of Kennedy, which he doesn't blame directly on Israel. I'd have to look more into it, but, on the CIA, still questioning this narrative. But even more than that, of COVID, where Jeffrey Sachs says COVID seems to have been developed in a bio lab, not in China, but in the United States. We have labs in Chapel Hill, in Fort Detrick, Maryland, and places like that, and unleashed in China. Mm-hmm. So Jeffrey Sachs is just moving more and more into this. And of course, on foreign policy, for the past 2 years, he's been just super solid. And because of his prominence, this is something you or I would not be able to do, but because of his prominence, Jeffrey Sachs is able to be invited to address the UN Security Council on issues like
Gaza.
Gaza and Ukraine and American foreign policy.
Yeah, right. Well, we got to look at it this way, and that's because there is a Jewish supremacism and a Jewish racism that gives Jews certain kinds of privilege and certain kinds of latitude. And the best way I've compared this to historically to how the Romans, when the Romans ruled the Mediterranean, they gave a lot of kind of local aspects and local freedom to certain areas and the local people who were the kings and the leaders of these countries that they worked with Rome. But the Romans who were actually Roman citizens, they were entitled much more aspects. For instance, they couldn't just be thrown in jail summarily. They had certain fundamental rights of answering for their charges, of being tried in a court, to getting their, you know, their side of the story out. They had certain privileges being a Roman citizen. And it's kind of that way with Jews. If someone's a Jew, they can definitely say more things about Jews than we can. Now, they can also cross the line. I'm surprised that Finkelstein is not completely blacked out, but in his book, The Holocaust Industry, the whole book is about the massive Holocaust frauds, how the Jews wrenched billions of dollars illegally and improperly and fraudulently out of Switzerland. And how so much of the Holocaust story, that he calls it the Holocaust industry, is based on nothing more than pure fraud, made up stories. As made up as they were, by the way, that some of the Jewish media in Israel has shown these Jewish soldiers talking about beheaded women and beheaded children and with a straight face in front of these kibbutzes where there was no beheadings. There was no children murdered and this kind of thing. And even showing that this is not a fact, or looking through a window, supposedly a woman with a Holocaust number on her, you know, imprinted tattoo on her arm, and how, you know, she suffered and all that by the Hamas. And the truth is, there was nobody by the name he gave. There was nobody in that kibbutz that died like that, and no Holocaust survivor. In other words, the effrontery, the chutzpah they have of making up these lies. So I'd like to respond to what you were saying about, Jeffrey Sachs, by saying, you know, he's got a great article. Basically, the argument is the same people, and he lists all these Jewish names, the same people gave us the war based on lies, the Iraq war, the same people that gave us the Ukraine war. And by the way, the same people that gave us the Ukraine war are giving us the genocide of Israel. Now, I want to point out something else, too, because, again, I want to go back to this Easter theme for a while and make people understand that the New Testament and Jesus Christ's life, the reason why Jews hated him so much is like partly, and if just a few days before the crucifixion, when he went into the Jewish temple and he drove them out with a cord of many strings, like a cat of nine tails, overturned their temples, one of the only times Jesus was ever violent. And that Jesus, one of the most famous stories of Jesus is the Samaritan woman in the well. And Jews were very strict about you even drink after a non-Jew. If you can't even drink from the same bottle, even with different cups, that you really can't cavort with them. You can't, you can't have the society with them. And Jesus, in the New Testament, it's a very famous passages where Jesus comes to a well. It's a Samaritan well and a Samaritan woman there. And he says, oh, hello. You know, he knows she's a Samaritan. It's mentioned in the New Testament. And he says, I'm very, very thirsty. Can I share some of your water with you? Which is totally against Jewish law. And because, again, Jews were the superior people of the world. They were the people of God. The other people were evil. They had satanic souls and all the rest of it, right? And she says, well, yeah, of course. Yeah, I'll share my water with you. And then Jesus says a lot of wonderful things. He said, well, thank you. And I come to bring you the water to quench your thirst for, you know, for salvation, your search for God, your search for truth, your search for, you know, changing the world. And in other words, he's basically saying to her that, you know, she's open to his teachings just as a Jew is. That itself is like a blasphemy to the Jews. But I wanted to quote a couple of the passages from the famous Protestant reformer, Martin Luther. And by the way, he's no different than the Jewish Catholic leaders who said similar things. But it kind of exposes. They're always talking to us about hate speech today. And anybody who actually denotes and shows Jewish hatreds and Jewish racism is called a hate speech.
I just need a point of clarification. Need a point of clarification. You just said Martin Luther was no different from the Jewish Catholic leaders. What do you mean by that?
That he was fighting the Jews. He was very Jewish aware.
And what do you mean?
Martin Luther had a different view on marriage. He believed priests should marry. So I'm just explaining the fact that it wasn't like he was against the Jews, but the Catholic Church wasn't.
Okay.
That's what I was doing.
So what do you mean by Jewish Jewish Catholic leaders? What does that mean?
No, not Jewish Catholic. The Catholic leaders are on the Jewish question.
Well, then you must have misspoken, because you said he was no different from Jewish Catholic leaders.
And I was trying to say the Catholic speakers on the Jews, not Jewish Catholic. Jewish issues with Catholic leaders is what I was trying to say. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Lack of good communication.
That's the clarification I wanted.
Thank you. Well, it's good. I'm glad you did that. It's easy to misspeak. But anyway, so let me just give a couple quotes about, and again, this shows you the incredible difference between today's view in our modern Jewish-controlled media and an establishment, including much of the church, because without the Jewish okay, these Jewish, Christian leaders couldn't even do their television shows on the cable networks or whatever they want to do. And anyone that talked about the Jews the way the New Testament talks about Jews would be condemned, right? So anyway, so this is what Luther wrote. This is from the Weimar editions of his writings. This is from Erlanger's editions. I can give you the exact sources. It's absolutely official, and everybody admits this. Quote, interiors we talk about, here's some hate. They have been taught, he's talking about Jews, so much deadly hatred against the Gentiles by their parents and rabbis since their earliest youth, and continue to feed their hate during the years of their lives. And this hatred has saturated their very blood and flesh. It fills the very marrow of their bones and has become inseparable from their whole being. I mean, he was very upset about these Jews, obviously. He said their Talmud and their rabbis teach them that a murder shall not be regarded as a sin whenever a Jew kills a Gentile, but only if a Jew murders a brother in Israel. Neither is it a sin to break an oath sworn to a Gentile. The Jews of our days will keep to these doctrines and follow the example of their fathers, taking every opportunity to partake of their deliberately false interpretation of the Lord's word. Their avariciousness, their usury, their thefts, their murders. Now, he also did a book called The Jewish Lexicon, showing how almost all the terms of organized criminality, like the dealing of stolen goods and loan sharking and all these other things, how they were so Jewish, and how Jews were involved in every form of organized crime to a great degree, just like Murder Incorporated was in the United States of America. And he says, this is a very powerful quote. I'll just close with this part. Maybe mild-hearted, and notice how humanly Luther speaks. And again, he's reacting to Jewish hatred. He's not starting off hating a bunch of Jews. He's reacting to what they do. Maybe mild-hearted and Gentile, or gentle Christians, will believe I'm too rigorous and drastic against the poor, afflicted Jews, he says it sarcastically, believing that I ridicule them and treat them with such sarcasm. By my word, I'm far too weak to be able to ridicule such a satanic breed. You should know that the Jews blaspheme and violate the name of our Savior every day. They are our public enemies and incessantly blaspheme our Lord Jesus Christ. They call the Blessed Mary, Virgin Mary, a harlot, a whore, basically, and her holy son a bastard. And they give us the epithet of changelings and abortions. If they could kill us all, they would gladly do so. In fact, many murder Christians. And that was in Luther's last sermon, by the way, a few days before his death in February of 1546. So that's kind of interesting, isn't it? That maybe anti-Semitism came out of recognition and acknowledgement by reading the scriptures of the Jews and seeing what they were doing. And there was maybe anti-Semitism was the reaction to Jewish anti-Gentilism and Jewish hatred and supremacism. What do you think, Doctor?
Well, you know, one thing that can be said as a starting point is that, as a starting point, you can say Jews and Europeans have been playing hardball with each other for many, many centuries. But when you really get down to it, and that's really kind of a cop out. When you really get down to it, who's keeping this hardball going? And the mass indignations, it's really fueled by Jews. I mean, so you can have a merry-go-round, and maybe everybody on the merry-go-round is spinning around, but the person who's propelling it is, in this case, in this metaphor, it is Jews. And so the Jews will want to with regards to Palestine or Gaza, for instance, everything is a Jewish response to a Palestinian provocation. But when you peel it back and you look at what's going on,
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, what's going on? Right on. Everybody thinks we're at home. Oh, but who are they to
everything is a Jewish response to a Palestinian provocation. But when you peel it back and you look at what's going on, you can see a series of events, and depending on where you want to put the starting point, you can put the starting point at any arbitrary place. You can put the starting point, like most recently, they want to put the starting point at October 7th. Okay, so October 7th, we know what happened on October 7th. Well, what's been happening since October 7th is just this massive, massive genocide. But that all has to be viewed as a retaliation to this, to one day of provocation. Well, of course, if you wanted to, you know, pick any arbitrary date before October 7th, and you look at what went on between that arbitrary date and October 7th, you're going to see mass incarcerations of Palestinians and torture in Israeli prisons. You're going to see Jewish settlers driving Palestinians off their land or murdering them, you're gonna find, depending on where you put that starting date, you're gonna find the IDF bombing Gaza, which is, they've done repeatedly, mowing the lawn. And so the only way to make this Palestinian provocation and Israeli retaliation work, and even then it really doesn't work very well because of the length of time of the and the intensity of these so-called retaliations, is to be extremely selective in what in your starting points for your narrative.
Let me we've only got a little time left, but let me give you a couple of quotes to end my side of this discussion, and something that really applies to the Palestinians. Now, look at Gaza. I mean, first they drive the Palestinians out of northern Gaza and say, you got to go south, otherwise we're going to kill you. And you know, and if you stayed in your homes, which again is all a war crime, it's all a genocide, actually. And they go south. Now they're telling them to drive, you know, then now they're telling them to vacate their homes and everything so they could bomb the crap out of them in the south, but they're killing them all over the south and the north. So one of the most important quotes, so I think I could kind of show you and give you a good hint of the nature, the true nature of the New Testament, which every Christian is supposed to be reading and worshiping and understanding. This is right out of 1 Thessalonians 2:14-16. Quote, "For you suffered like things of your own countrymen, as they did from the Jews, who killed both the Lord Jesus and the prophets, and drove us out, and displease God, and oppose all men, and keep us from teaching and sharing our truth to the Gentiles." Boy, that's so true today, isn't it? And another good quote was from Titus, where it says, "Therefore rebuke them sharply, that they be of sound of faith, instead of giving heed to Jewish myths or to commands of men." So when we talk about being driven out of and think about Gaza, think about the fact that they're actually driving Europeans out of parts of America. I mean, my old neighborhood, our people, Europeans, were driven out of, in Gentilly Woods, where I grew up. Many cities are like that. They're actually, through their policies and programs, they're actually driving us out of our own countries, our own cities, our own society, and they've certainly driven us out of the media, the banking institutions, and the political monies that control politics. I'm out of time. Dr. Slattery, thank you so much for being with me. Yeah, I hope you have a great show.
I need to say thank you for joining me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
All right with me, 'cause you just came to see.